Welcome to Wellness Renaissance and Gluten-Free and Other Special Diets podcast, supporting you on your unique journey to finding your best health.
Hello, this is Judy, and I'm here with Joel.
Hello.
Hello. We are, well, I am, I guess we are, as is usual for this podcast, we don't really have an exact format, and as per all of our other shows, or many of our other shows, this one will kind of diverge into a little bit of a different direction around health and wellness and life in general. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to share this story for a couple of reasons. One, because it's a story that has popped up in weird situations and conversations with people, and everybody's kind of taken something a little bit different away from it. And one person in particular has shared this story with a bunch of people and kind of what it ended up meaning to her. So I thought I'd share it here, partially because of the meaning that it has and the thought-provoking things that came out of it. Mm-hmm. But also we have some shows coming up. Just I did an interview with a woman around advanced care directives, which will be coming up in the future, most likely. We haven't posted that out yet when this
interview's done, just haven't posted and edited and all that good stuff. Yeah,
exactly. And this was I felt when I was having this conversation with Beth, the person that we're going to be sharing the interview with, some of the story seemed really fitting. And like I said, it's come up a bunch of times. So basically, the story is about a weekend that both Joel and I spent with Moose, my furry cousin.
Mm-hmm. Four-legged.
Four-legged furry cousin. Golden Retriever. Golden Lab.
Golden Lab.
Okay.
And Yellow Lab is the breed technical term.
Yep,
but he's not a cross. He was, I think part of the reason we always call him a golden is because he was non-standard breed. He was actually more something colored than most Yellow Labs. So, but he wasn't abnormal. He was just slightly off.
His ears were golden.
Oh, he was awesome. Yeah.
So, well, I'm just saying his ears were golden.
True.
Anyway, so this weekend that we spent was it November? Yeah, it was. It was Thanksgiving
Sounds
weekend.
Right. Yeah.
And we were dog sitting for Moose and Moose's brother and their other kitties. And Moose was having kidney failure. So he had been going down. He'd been having issues for a really long time.
Yeah, about 2 years in total. Really minor issues that didn't show up much. And then probably the last 6 months or so, he had been borderline up and down, but usually still pretty up.
Yeah. Yeah. And he had a couple times where it was kind of looking bad.
Mm-hmm.
But then one of the times, especially, it was the meds. You know, and then he kind of bounced back. So he was doing good, but at this point, he wasn't really eating, and everybody was trying to pretty much feed him anything they could possibly get in him.
Right. Though certainly still wasn't time-wise outside the bounds of it being a bounce thing.
Right, yeah.
He had certainly stopped eating before for as much time as when we picked it up. They were kind of expecting him to get hungry at some point and eat.
Right. And at this point, he also wasn't really drinking water. So he was getting fluids, which again, happens for some animals. They get fluids for, you know, a while. So again, not really knowing which direction things were going to go.
Right.
So we were, like I said, dog sitting that weekend, and he was kind of just really kind of mopey and slow moving. And, you know, it was clear that he wasn't doing great, but he was very present, very much aware of what you were doing, very much wanted to be around people, still kind of happy, right? And
mm-hmm.
but so we were there the whole weekend, and on a Saturday morning he had really not been doing a whole lot the day before. But I took him and his brother Jack outside. My goal was to run Jack, because Jack has a ton of energy. And my plan was to give Moose a ball, because Moose sometimes would just go when he was kind of having harder times. He would run and play fetch, and then you could say, you know, go calm down, and he'd go and play with a ball by himself and just kind of do his own thing. Yeah. Well, I walked outside with the balls in my hand that they hadn't seen yet, and then all of a sudden, I walk outside, Moose goes tearing up the driveway, like full speed. freaked me out because I was so sure that instinct had kicked in and he was chasing a wolf or, you know, something had made him run. Mm-hmm. And this was not a dog that had been moving very quickly around the house. All of a sudden, then he turns back around, looks at me, ears up, body up, just ready to go. And I realized then, of course, that he had seen the ball and he wanted to play fetch. And I stood there for a second, kind of dumbfounded in my, okay, think there's, he's not going to get, you know, taken over by a wolf or whatever. Mm-hmm. But that moment of holy crud, I cannot believe that dog just moved that fast with that much energy after having no food, no real water.
And not really moving the day before. He was
exactly.
pretty much on his bed, and he would lift his head and be happy to see you, but he wasn't really, it's not like he got up to greet you, tail wagging. He pretty much stayed in his bed.
Right, and when he was up, his head was even kind of down. And he, yeah. Moose in general, happy dog. The world is just existing. Know. Living was the most wonderful thing in the world. Everybody was awesome. It was just, yeah. And so I was like, okay, this is interesting. What do I do with this? Because here's this dog who's not well, but really wants to play. And I thought, well, you know, obviously his body can do that. So I threw for him and I threw for Jack. And I was trying to be gentle with not throwing too much and giving him some breaks. But he wasn't even really wearing out. Like in some of the times in the past when he wasn't doing great, he would mm-hmm. show more signs of exhaustion than he was that day.
Right.
So I played with him and then I kind of like calmed down about it because I'm like thinking, okay, I mean, A, this isn't my dog, right? This is my aunt's dog. I don't want to kill my aunt's dog. However, everybody has pointed out that had he died during playing fetch, it just would have been an easy transition to, you know, his doggy heaven. So, but I kept on, you know, I would kind of play with him and he came over to me and he would take his ball and he would throw it at me from his mouth. You know, he'd toss it at me. And then it would roll back to him and he'd toss it at me. And he just looked at me with these eyes that were different than mm-hmm. I had ever seen him look at me before. And he just, it to me, and I said this to you that day, mm-hmm. but it was horrible because I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to think this to be the truth, but this is just what I felt, was that he was saying to me, look, this is my last good day on this earth. All I want to do is play ball. Just throw the ball. Let's play ball. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to balance out all of this, you know, not my dog, but wanting to follow his body's desires and his desires. If this is his last good day on the planet, mm-hmm. you know. So we played some more. And again, back to the same thing, him just looking at me like, come on, let's keep going. Well, eventually we stopped. We went into the house. And it was pretty quickly insty mopey. Mm-hmm. Back to the slow, back to the...
He pretty much went back to the bed and laid down.
Laid down, yeah. And so for the rest of the day, I think we may have taken him out one more time to play fetch. Because I think I showed you how intensive he was, you know, just with his body going to puppy mode. And then after that, we no more food. All I could get him to eat the rest of the day was grabbing snow from outside and feeding him that, because that seemed to be something that he would do when he was outside. So we did that. After that, the weekend, you know, he ended up getting worse and just more continued stillness, more continued not being excited about the planet. But he didn't, again, not looking horribly in pain and that kind of thing either. So the end of the story, or the end result, was that he ended up, his puppy parents basically decided he had had enough on Monday and put him down. But it was such an interesting thing, and this whole thing on multiple levels, because it was just such the kind of idea about how our bodies can be, you know, from a puppy's perspective, but I'm also thinking from human perspective too, a little bit, how much when you're doing something that is exciting for you, or that is your calling, or what you know, is it causes your body the ability to do things that you normally couldn't do, right?
Right.
And we all would like to cultivate this more often in ourselves when we have to do things that we don't want to do, and we try to psych ourselves up to do that.
Right.
But it is, you know, but it is really amazing how our body, when we are in our flow, how our body can work. I mean, you think of a couple of different things. You think of the adrenaline when, you know, say somebody picks up a car or whatever, because it's what you need to do, right? I mean, you think of how much power our hormones and what's flowing in our body has.
Well, I think about, I mean, in my childhood, and a little less so now, but still kind of there, of I have struggled my entire life with getting up in the morning. But as a kid, if you told me I was going fishing, which is a huge pastime of mine as a kid, the next day, I would actually wake up before my alarm, which is pretty much unheard of for me. I'm a really, really sound sleeper. So, but yeah, there's hormones have got to play a role. Hormones influenced by mood, influenced by factors into how our body works.
Right. And it's, well, and I'm trying to come up with a good example of this, because I almost think of it from a parent saying to a child, well, if you had that much energy when I told you to do X, you know,
right,
which is a thing, but I'm also thinking of for my own physical body, you know, I had whatever it is that has been going on in my body for years of just kind of the general pain, probably the closest thing to describe it is fibromyalgia type stuff, right? But I could go dancing for hours and hours and hours. But a lot of other things, I mean, sometimes just walking a half a block could be really horrible. So it's just the weirdness of what your body can do. And I always had that, you know, so then what would happen was you'd say things like that to people, or people would see that. And then they kind of have this, okay, so you're really not feeling the way that you say you're feeling, you know?
Well, and the weird thing is we would sometimes comment on that, and you would expect somewhat that the next day you would pay for it, so to speak. And I don't remember that really being the case. It's not like the day after you went on a dancing jag, you were just like beat to the ground.
Right. Not typically.
Yeah, you pretty much recovered through that as if it was just, you know, normal.
My feet would hurt, but that was about it.
Right.
You know, depending on what shoes I was wearing. Yeah, no, it's kind of wild. But yeah, just the, I don't know, just a lot of thoughts come of that, of just being, if we could just all be in our flow, and how when we are in our flow, how our internals are working, and how what is flowing inside us and making everything. Again, I wish I had better examples of this, but when we think of people who are just in their space and in their flow and how they can go forever and ever, and when you're doing something you love, you know, I think of, I mean, just kind of the energy, you know, when I think of when I was in college and I was working on one of the events that I put together was bringing Robert Kenner, the director of Food Inc., to UMD. And I would spend hours and hours and hours on that a week. And then I would be at 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. That's when I got to start doing my schoolwork. And I still had the energy to do it because I was so in my zone and excited and pumped up. You know what I mean? And this is probably why when so many, you know, then at holiday times or whatever, your body just went, bleh, you know, and you're done with something like that. Your body's like, okay, I can crash now, you know? So, yeah, I don't know. I just thought that was interesting in just kind of really being reminded of that in this such visual and kind of visceral way. This, another thing that kind of came up from this is I had shared this story with a friend who, it was interesting timing that I shared this with her because she was at a point, had a happening in her life that was pointing to her how important play was. And so now, so when I told her the story, it was right about at this time that this whole thing had happened with her. And so it was kind of just another piece in that puzzle of play is really important. And she's been making play with her family a priority.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And just whatever that looks like. And the concept of play, as she has said, and as I totally agree with, can be a pretty broad spectrum, but it is kind of a little bit you being in your flow. You know, maybe it is you spending time with your family doing nothing or just talking to each other and being in each other's space and sharing and whatever. But finding that, whatever that looks like for you, and making a point to have it and share it, especially with the people being in that zone together. And I had written a newspaper article about this as well here in Duluth in our budgetary news. And one of the things that I point out in there, you know, is kind of the idea of finding those things in our life that we can hold on to that make the good hormones or whatever flow. And so, you know, maybe sometimes that's helping another person or supporting another person. And maybe sometimes it's just a really good cup of tea.
Right. Well, because you're kind of getting close to saying finding your passion, but it's kind of almost a slightly different nuance than that, I would assume.
Yeah, and I'm probably kind of looking at the breadth of what that means. In it kind of, you know, Moose brings it out in that big way. Like, his thing in life was playing ball. That was
yeah.
what you do. That's what you live for. That's the goal of everything you do. You how to get the dog sitter to go play ball. That's the goal.
Right.
That is what fired him up and got him happy and moving, and everything was in his space. Well, we can't all play fetch all the time,
no.
you know, as humans. Like, I mean, if we can, I mean, for the people who get to do their life, you know, say you're a performer or whatever. I mean, some people, I'm not saying you have to be a performer to love your job. There's a lot of people who have very, very different jobs, but that's their zone. That's their space. That's what drives them. And it's like, how do we all find that? You know, whatever that means. And you can't always do that. Maybe you don't have a job that you love, or you have a lot of things about it that are stressful. So it's like, what else? What little pieces of life can we take that could be little games of fetches? hence the kind of the good cup of tea. You know, I mean, you and I tend to use that example a little bit, because mm-hmm. When I make my green tea in the morning, perfect, it's a stop-worthy moment of me to sit and enjoy my tea for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Same with a good cup of chai. You know, chai is one of our favorite drinks, which I know is also tea, but I'm talking Indian chai.
Indian spice chai, yeah. Well, not yes. spice, but...
Not so, yeah, but a little bit of spice.
Yeah.
It is the moment, like when our Indian restaurant makes that right, I can hardly not be audible about it.
Right. Oh, trust me. Not really.
Because it is, but it is that, I guess I'm just like, how can we connect those pieces? How can we find those pieces? It's a healthy thing for us to do.
Right.
Right?
It's weird because it's always been phrased as kind of soul infilling or soul enriching. Mm-hmm. And yes, it is, very much so. But I think, I mean, some of what you're alluding to is there science backing that those quote-unquote soul enrichment things feed the body's physiological workings just as much.
Right. Exactly. I mean, I saw something on Facebook and just recently, so it brought this to mind, and I've certainly heard it before, and I've heard and read some of the studies about how having a bad thought or an angry moment causes all these things to happen in your body, but having a happy moment or laughing causes all these other opposite reactions that last a really long time too. And so it's finding that balance, or not finding the balance so much, but reminding us that the negativity, the sadness, the whatever has true effects, but so does the happiness.
Right.
And then these are different kinds of happiness, or maybe they're not. Maybe I don't have an answer for that. Maybe they send different hormones out in our bodies. Do they send, you know, I'm assuming that they certainly could, but yeah, but it's like us being able to grab onto those things. And take advantage of it and really sink into the moment and enjoy it, I guess, is kind of let your body have that hormone rush or the chemical rush of the goodness, you know, mm-hmm. is what I'm trying to say for the enjoyment and appreciation and the mood shift. Because sometimes those things really do shift your mood for the day.
Right. Well, and it seems like we have so many different ways of saying that exact same sentiment in the flow of English. Of all the accurate, you know, the cliches that we have built around stuff, of mm-hmm. the whole, you know, if you make your hobby your job, you'll never work a day in your life.
Right.
Well, it's essentially the same thing. If you can find a way to play within your daily life,
mm-hmm.
It's easier to live your daily life. It's not a drag.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I. You and I both used to work for a guy who mm-hmm. part of what it was to make you laugh. And it wasn't like he, you know, went in, okay, I've got a 10:02, tell a joke. But it was that he was naturally humorous. So you were genuinely laughing
mm-hmm.
and you all were genuinely laughing. And so it made the tough times a little bit easier, but it's kind of some of the glue that held you together and held your day together when you were having a tough day. And we all know right. that laughing can be a really positive thing, but it's also that, you know, it's like the laughing for me, laughing at a television show is different than laughing with my friends, and that's that connection. I mean, again, we all can experience that too, where laughing with your friends and having that shared experience is so much more deeply felt. And it would be fun to look at the charts and graphs of what chemicals are released in your body when you're laughing at the Big Bang Theory versus when you're having a belly laugh with your friends from something. You know, it'd just be fun. I find that stuff kind of interesting.
No, agreed. Well, and it'd be interesting, because I'm sure the studies exist out there of the whole, my goodness, there's plenty of comedy clubs.
Right.
Which has always kind of confused me slightly. Maybe it says something about staged comedy like that. Mm-hmm. That's always paired with alcohol. It's like you're kind of going after two different physiological problems there then. Or not problems, but...
responses?
Taking a depressant with something that makes you happy has always seemed kind of screwed up to me.
Well, it's probably that way the comedians that aren't really funny, your inhibitions are down, so you're laughing harder.
Makes sense.
At them. So it's all about making the comic who isn't great feel good, maybe. But your point is an interesting one. It's an interesting point. Yeah. And one of the other things that came up for me through this, and Joel, pop in with like whatever I'm not talking about that you experienced this weekend too.
Yeah. I remember that you're saying the weekend with Moose.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, my main surprise, I think it was the same, kind of the same reaction of looking down at this being who was basically screaming with all he could say, and because I am the person I am, heard a lot of profanity in that when we wouldn't throw the ball for him. Just saying, come on, people, just do this for me.
Yeah.
You know the game. We've gone over this before. Why are you not doing this?
Right.
And kind of logic in, because, we were talking to each other the entire time of remarking on how different a dog this was, and kind of almost trying to convince us of the same concept of, it's we don't want to stress him because we want him to bounce.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I had house sat for them a few times in the recent past where you weren't around, and had seen him go through the down and bounce up again. Mm-hmm. So I was, throughout all these conversations between us that day, I was still expecting that bounce the next day.
Mm.
You know, I wasn't expecting that this is the final down.
Mm-hmm.
But I was even in that saying, even if, heaven forbid, this is the final down, he would rather be following his reason for living, playing fetch, on that last down than if he could live another year and been denied, being able to chase that ball.
Right.
You know, if for some magical, somebody bestowed, okay, as long as he never runs again, he'll live a year.
Right.
He would choose, no, today, we're playing ball then.
Right.
And just that single-mindedly, so we were kind of convincing ourselves of the whole, no, we've got to let him run a little bit more, because he so wants that.
Yeah.
It's so his reason for living and purpose.
And because he wasn't getting tuckered out as, like some of the other times that I've taken care of him when his hips were bad.
Yeah.
He'd go and play by
himself.
Right. But you could see that you could reason, you could look at him and go, okay, sweetie, you got to take a break. You're tired out. Your body's, you need to go over there for a little bit and go play. And he would kind of do that. And he'd come back occasionally, okay, I'm ready now. Can you throw me again? But it was nothing like the look in his face that day. That was just so, to me, so clear. But I also didn't want to admit it. I didn't want this to be his last week. You know what I mean?
Right.
I didn't want this to be the last time. So I didn't want that to be the case. But my gosh, every cell in my being was like, dude, you know what he's trying to tell you right now.
Yeah.
And that was just really, really hard to find the balance of that. Because, it does cause that question of what is life worth? What is life, or what does life mean? Because like you say, if somebody said you get to be alive on the planet, puppy, but you don't get to play with a ball ever.
Right.
And it would be like, what? Wait, what?
Well, and it comes down to, and we're getting out of health and into spirituality and the philosophy of why we're on the planet, so to speak. But I think it bears going down that road, because it is, in so many of our daily human interactions, it is that question of what can you not live without doing?
Mm-hmm.
What makes life not worth living for you?
Right. And actually, I'll be honest, I don't, in the upcoming interview that isn't out yet, I talk about this a little bit with Beth, with one of the books that she brings up. And one of the things the doctor is asking his patients or suggesting to talk about is, yeah, when, what means life to you?
Right. And it's the weirdness of, I haven't listened to that interview yet, so I'm trying not to overtalk the interview.
No, right. And you're not, you're fine. But no, and I'm just bringing it up because it's the next logical step in the discussion that you're bringing up.
Right.
But it truly is. And I think it's a great question to ask. I mean, I think in the book, that I apologize because I can't remember what it's called right off the top of my head. But it's one person said, if I can't eat chocolate anymore, and I think there's a really interesting thing. I get into weird discussions with people about these things. And I've had some really interesting discussions with people and heard some interesting things too about that. What is it for you if I can't do these sometimes simple life things, if I can't, you know, have a cup of tea, if I can't have warm toast anymore, if I can't, you know.
It is weird how a lot of that comes down to food sometimes.
Yeah.
Which I kind of get. I would love to, again, morbid thoughts, but I'd love to actually get them to that point. And is that truly what it would be for people?
Right.
Because for me, it is more, I mean, I've had a few members of my family with Alzheimer's. So that's my big thing, is if I'm not there anymore, that's kind of my end. If I can't, but it's that weirdness of, we still don't know, even in Alzheimer's, if they truly aren't there, if they just can't communicate.
Right.
But yeah, it would be interesting. I know a few of our, at least one of our friends has said, yeah, if I can't have good tea, no, it's not worth it. It's like, wow, that it's so strange to me, because to me, it's my thing is always about being able to communicate to the world, or at least experience the world.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm stuck with only the ability to blink at people, as long as my brain's still there, then I'm still good.
Right.
But if I totally, yeah, if I go down to a vegetable, then it's just done.
Well, and yeah, you kind of wonder. Yeah, I mean, obviously food and taste is such an important thing for us, and it's something that we appreciate so much.
Gotcha.
That, yeah, you kind of do wonder when you can't. I mean, granted, if you can't eat anymore, but you can still talk to people.
Right.
You can still at least communicate that experience to them and decide, or maybe you can decide, it depends on the situation, obviously, decide what to do or what you want to do or whatever. But I mean, you have some, if you can still communicate, but you still can't actually intake food in your mouth to taste. I think that's a pretty big thing for people too, you know? So it's a pretty driving force. Food is a pretty driving force. If you've got an appetite, it's a pretty big deal to not have that.
Makes sense.
I don't know. And again, these are all things that we're talking about when we can have them. So like you said, it's when you get down to it, what's the nitty gritty?
Right.
Nonetheless, it's an interesting question and discussion to have or to think about for our own sake. Mm-hmm. One of the other things that for me was like just a big thing this weekend, this Moose weekend, thinking about life, the universe and everything. Because that's kind of what this whole thing was about. And that's my goal for this discussion, is kind of like unpacking this whole thing. Because it was kind of an intensive weekend. And anyway, you also have to understand that Moose was a big part of all of our lives.
Yeah, he wasn't just a dog we saw, you know, three times in his life. We spent a lot of time with that being.
Right. And him and I had a pretty cool relationship. Yeah. So it was it was definitely losing a very close member of your family.
Right.
In that respect, because that's basically what he was. But the thing that was also really powerful for me, and the thing that I walked away from, was because basically we were doing hospice care for the puppy, who wasn't a puppy, he was 11 years old, but all dogs are puppies to me. And it was very much, it was really hard to leave on Sunday when I had to go back home.
Right.
And they had even offered me to stay, but I had a bunch of stuff to do at home. And so it was like really hard, because I knew I needed to go home and be an adult and take care of my stuff. But I really just wanted to hang out with Moose for the rest of whatever happened. And at that point, they didn't know what they were doing. So it wasn't like a decision made.
Well, and again, they had seen him bounce, you know, dozens of times.
Right. So for me, being able to have that time that I had with him to be able to take care of him was like such a huge piece in allowing me to let him go. Like, it helped me understand that the thing that I walked away from was the thought of if somebody wants to take care of somebody or be a part of somebody's care in their last days, I guess. I mean, and I haven't fully figured out how to encapsulate this because there's caveats all over the place.
Gotcha.
But to be able to, if you can, or if it's okay with the person being cared for, to let them do that, that's a, to me, that's a really big deal. Like, I never would have, what am I trying to say? It's hard to encapsulate into words. If we weren't dog sitting that weekend, I probably, obviously, A, wouldn't have been there. And that would have been a huge loss for me. Like, that would have been really horrible. Mm-hmm. But if the dog parents were around, I wouldn't have probably taken care of him as much, right? It would have been their responsibility to do all of the things that they do. And so it would have been a distant thing, and I would have been in his presence, and that would have been nice. But it was such an interesting piece for me to discover about myself, that the process of me being able to try to help him feel better was a huge piece of closure for me. And I'm sure anybody listening to this who has taken care of somebody in their dying days, or the reason they take care of their parents, that's probably exactly what it's about.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense.
But it was just the first time that I've not done that really with a human. But it was just that whole wow, you know, to let somebody, when somebody says, can I help you? You know, when I'm thinking of people who are offering people help, and they get told, no, we're fine. You know, not that you should maybe just come up with things for them to do, but at the same time, let them do some of those things because of just the whole, the feeling of being a part of something as closure is right. I'm not sure I'm spouting anything new here. It's my own discovery. And I know I've kind of heard those things because people ask to help because they want to. They really do want to be a part of that. But just the understanding that telling them no is taking something away from them. If you can do it, you can do otherwise. It's akin to one of our friends. This is years ago. She didn't want to have Christmas gifts one year. She wanted you to, I think the end result was she wanted you to donate, but she didn't want to have Christmas gifts for whatever reason.
Right. And I think she was coming at it from a materialistic standpoint.
Yes, it was a good place that she was coming from, for sure.
Right.
And her dad said, but you're taking away the opportunity for people to give you gifts. And that, when he said that, when she said that to me, that was so resonating with me. Because I think I was feeling this weird mourning over her saying she didn't want a Christmas gift. And I couldn't quite grasp at that point in time why. Like, I felt bummed, and I felt like there was something being slightly stolen from me, but I didn't feel negative towards her because she was doing it for all the right reasons.
Right.
And when she said that that's what her dad said, it was like, oh, yep, that's it. That's really important for me to do this. It's important for me to us to have this. So it was just, I don't know. It's just an interesting process to walk through some of these things to really understand how much of an effect they have, because though I'm not sure that I ever would have asked to be there in that space, I would want, you know, like if you knew that it was his last weekend, Moose's last weekend, I would want to be in the space. I probably would never ask to be in that space, but I am so eternally grateful that I got to be in the space and feel kind of bad that you know, Moose's parents weren't around. I think that was part of my guilty feeling, was that that they didn't get to have it. But they had, I mean, I know they had a whole life with him.
Yeah, well, and they had a whole life, and they had, you can't diminish the amount of caretaking they had done over the past, you know, couple months of that. It's kind of like the hospice. If you're in a hospice situation with a human, which arguably, you know, closer connections, possibly even, you still have to take a break and take care of yourself.
Right.
That's part of the reason hospice exists, so that you as a primary caregiver or primary partner or whatever can still take that, you know, 6 hours away or whatever and just be human outside of that care bond. No matter how strong that care bond is, you still need time to just kind of take care of yourself. That was kind of where they were that weekend. They kind of sensed, possibly more than we did going into it, that this might be kind of the final down. but still needed some time away to kind of clear their heads and make the end of life choices, since it's really hard to ask a dog whether or not they want to be around.
Right. And I know that it was, they had an event to go to, but it was also about the self-care.
Oh yeah, totally.
The self-care and the going and having fun. And it's amazing how much work. I mean, I know some people will be like, it's a dog for crying out loud, but it's a dog, you know, you have to care for the dog. You have to do what you need to do to take care of the dog. And it's a lot of work. And Moose had been a lot of work in just making sure he got his pills on time and, you know, just all of those things that everybody potentially goes through who's gone through hospice, right? There's just all these little details.
Right.
So there had been that going through that. And then this was just obviously a whole different deal. But it was an interesting thing too, because I spent, before I left, I spent a lot of time hanging out with Moose, and his brother Jack was just, his brother Jack has a ton of energy and is usually a little bit of a hellion, shall we say, at times. He can be in your face. He's a super smart dog, and he knows how to get your attention. And he had been so good that weekend. It was really interesting in some of the times when you needed to really be specific with Moose and make sure he was okay and get him, you know, he kind of had a one period where he didn't have a seizure, but he kind of went into this breathing thing, if I remember correctly, where we were like, oh, what's going on?
Yeah.
And Jack was being really good.
Yeah.
And then
we can spin off into a whole doggy podcast.
And no, yeah.
Because the interplay between those two, who were, even though you keep saying brother, not biological siblings, but had lived all of Jack's life, had been with Moose. He's a little bit younger, I believe. And yeah, it's weird to see those interplays, because Jack, throughout Moose's life, kind of treated Moose like, yes, a big brother he cared about, but kind of it was, yeah, he's the big brother, whatever, play with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
And now, since Moose passing, he's a different dog.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of his life was fixated on the interaction he had with Moose, his other dog.
Even though you wouldn't fully know it, you're kind of saying.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and Jack was, like, when I was sitting there with Moose, Jack was just sitting there paying super tons of attention to what was going on. And you just so wonder what's going through Jack's little head, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So it's just an interesting experience. I mean, I've had
it's an interesting statement on connection again there. I think we all kind of, we are who we are based on our connections with other people and beings.
It sounded very profound.
Well, we are who we are. In other words, all of our personality is based on ourselves, yes, but in a vacuum, our personalities are not, I don't think, complete. So in some ways, what I'm trying to say is Jack's personality that we're used to seeing is a incorporation of Jack and his relationship with Moose.
Mm-hmm.
So without that relationship piece there, he's a different being. So in other words, if you take away all of your human surroundings,
mm-hmm.
and interconnections, your personality is a different personality in a vacuum.
Right.
And it's just an interesting reminder how connected we are, even if, because like myself, I'm an incredible introvert. But if you take away all of the people around me, I have a different personality.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's simplistic of a realization, but it's...
Oh, I think that's true. I'm much more clever when nobody's around. It's very sad. All my humor is wasted on nobody.
I'm a much better dancer when nobody's around, so...
What's that?
I said I'm a much better dancer when nobody's around.
I'm sure you are. Sorry, that's funny. I don't know where else to go from that.
Sorry.
No.
Killed the conversation.
I feel like I have thoughts about that, but they're 3 days away.
Oh, yeah. Well, it gets pretty deep when you're talking about end of life and purpose and all. I mean, we're going deep into the pool.
No, agreed. And it's an interesting pool to go into.
Mm-hmm.
I personally think, and you will see this from a couple podcasts down the road. But I think it's a really important thing. And I think it's something that we all need to discuss more and take advantage of moments like this, whether it's your dog or whoever, to have some of these discussions. I think they're really, right. I think they're really important. And I think a lot can be just gained from them. And so many, gosh, even not talking about the end of, like, the actual, say, process of dying, exactly end of life, but just the conversations that come out about things and life and thought processes and beliefs and contemplations are just really cool.
Right.
And worthy of having, and the closeness that can bring and bridge and be thought provoking is just, it's really, really lovely. And if you get to share that with people, take advantage of it and enjoy it, because it's something that a lot of people, I don't think, get to have. You know, I think a lot of people miss out on that. Grab from what you can is, I guess, basically what I'm trying to say. And, you know, when you're living, find your, well, as my article was called, find your fetch. find your things that bring you joy in life, and get your body moving. And it's those little awarenesses of things that we have that we can grab onto every day that just make life just a little bit more exciting, and get those good chemicals flowing, and rock on, man. We got enough stuff dragging us down. We got to grab onto the good stuff when we can get it.
Totally agreed.
All right. Well,
coming back up for air.
On that intensive note, thank you for listening. I know for some people these discussions are really hard, and I'm hoping that if there are people listening that they are, and you're listening, you know, in a sense by yourself, where you don't have to be judged or whatever by somebody else, process what you can about it. It's a good thing. And I say that from a perspective of having a lot of processing things about a lot of things, about a lot of this in just various classes and that I took when I was at UMD.
Right.
And have had some really good educational pieces in philosophy and that stuff where these discussions are brought up. And it's always fascinating to see the mood in the room or the people in the discussion. I didn't start learning how difficult and what kind of shapes that took until later in life. I knew it was something you shouldn't talk about, but not really understanding totally why, except that it's bad. And that's not really the reality. It's not bad. It's complex. So thank you for listening. Check out the website at wellnessrenaissance.com. You can find other podcasts there, and you can also connect on Facebook at facebook.com/wellnessren. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Talk to you later.